Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcast, wherever you get your fine podcasts. Rate us, review us. We like 5 stars. Give us 4 stars. All I think is that you are being a hater. I have got topics for you. We have got the anthem protest that didn't have to be a protest. It isn't even really a protest of the anthem. But first, I'd like to talk a bit about Tiger Woods and to join us for the entirety of our conversation, Pablo Torre in the house.
Yeah. New house.
It is a new house. We are actually recording from the Seaport. We have not had to go somewhere else in order to record this. That makes our lives a whole lot easier. And people listening here don't care about a single bit.
But you know what? It'll come through in the joy that we bring as a result of not having to commute.
Yes. 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 No, it like unnecessary subway ride.
It's raining. It's just gross out right now. Come on. It's August. You can empathize with us.
It is whack outside. Now, also, for those of you who do not know, we do a television show that is called High Noon. As you might guess from a title like High Noon, the show comes on at noon Eastern time. Effective September 11th, we'll be going to 4 Eastern time and we will be on for half an hour.
I'm excited about this. I am so looking forward to the life that we will be leading and the show we will be doing as a result of this change. Do I miss the second half hour? Can this be the eulogy for our second half hour?
I mean, if we had a second half hour, we'd do it. Look, this is the way I explain it to people, just to keep it simple, because, you know, for us, it's like, okay, cool, we come to work, right?
It is mostly that.
But if they had told us when this first started, we're going to give you a TV show, but it's going to be a half hour, I don't think we would have looked at him and been like, well, hell no. That's where I draw the line. I demand those extra 30 minutes. Oh, no. They got some pretty good TV shows around here that's a half hour.
Who do you think we are? Scrubs like that Kornheiser and Wilbon fellow?
Right. But no, just so you guys know, September 11th, the show will be going to half an hour at 4 o'clock Eastern time. This week that we're recording this, we're on until Wednesday. Then we got a week off, and then the last week of August we'll be on, and then we'll come back to you right after football season gets started. In the meantime, we watch golf.
We did. I watched more golf yesterday than – I mean, I watched the Open because of Tiger previously, but this felt more event-like even.
Well, so let's explain the Tiger effect in this, right? Coming off 18 and watching Tiger walk through the people and make the walk to go back to the clubhouse and all of it – it was a victory that wasn't a victory. Like, I compared it. It's like a Rocky movie, like the first Rocky movie or the Rocky Balboa when we fought Antonio Tarver, where the outcome did not matter. And, like, we don't even like this dude that much.
It's more fun when he is here. I don't care about golf. Like, my dad is a huge golf obsessive. That is his number one thing. And he hates that I never got into golf. But this, man, this is different. It's not golf. It's not golf.
Well, it points to something interesting, right, to think about here. This Koepka dude has won 3 of the last 6 majors that he's played. He's won 3 majors in the last 2 years. Back-to-back wins at the U.S. Open. I know nothing about this dude. And now he has won 3 of these in the last 2 years. I say that to say that our interest in Tiger is maybe 10% about the golf itself. Because this is somebody doing mm-hmm. something crazy impressive with golf, and we don't care.
His departure was reputed to open up this huge power vacuum and like, yeah, we'll get all the young guns in there, Jordan Spieth, you know, Rory McIlroy, whatever, we'll get them in there. We didn't really care.
Mm-mm.
I mean, they were great, and they each had their runs of greatness, of course, but no, simultaneously, we were like, replace this man. But at the same time, we were also by no means going to grade them on a curve.
No.
It's like, wait, but you're not Tiger, right? Because we still don't care.
Right. Dude, the ratings were up this year in the final round, 69% over last year. They were the highest ratings since 2009. Do you remember what happened at the 2009 PGA on the final round?
I imagine that it involved something with, well, wait, Tiger was 10 years ago, so it wasn't Tiger?
No, it was 9 years ago. It was not Tiger. Well, it was Tiger, but it was Tiger squaring off
in
the Asian showdown.
Y.E. Yang?
Tiger Woods and Y.E. Yang, where Y.E. Yang won and held his bag over his head, and Tiger looked like he wanted to kick him in the back.
I'm so glad I remember that. I feel so bad if I had.
I know that you – I knew you would remember it as you have like this marked of every moment in Asian history to break out, to claiming the whole damn continent. But
correct.
Yeah, but that's – I mean, this is him. It's about him, and we don't even like the dude that much.
Well, this is the next thing is when we look back at how we evaluated Tiger on a moral level. What kind of a villain was he? What did he do that deserved that title? Yes, his family exploded. He did his wife wrong. There is no question about that. But I've also just seen enough guys get involved in legitimately criminal and horrendous things across the spectrum where Tiger, that's, I mean, not to make, you know, not to diminish it, but that's a misdemeanor.
Hold on. Why can't we diminish it? Like, why do we feel, no, I'm asking you, like, why do we feel the need to entertain this idea that people care that much about Tiger cheating on his wife?
Right. Yeah, I gotta say, I don't really care. I am trying to do is nod to his wife, who I'm sure.
Well, to be fair on that one, I'm not saying that this necessarily made it square, but
it was handled and resolved in the justice system.
Even before the sizable divorce settlement, it appears that a golf club may have been involved and he'd been chased out of the home. Right? Like,
true.
I mean,
true.
Let's not pretend as though she did that exact some measure of revenge in these circumstances. And let's not pretend like this is the first time this has ever happened.
Well,
what happened, at least to me, as that blew up, it just became a hilarious scandal. Like, what nobody wants to talk about is what made this funny is that it was this guy that got caught up in this way. And they initially gave us the story as Tiger Woods was involved in a serious car accident in his driveway. And I was like, that's not possible. Let's see what else comes out of this. And that's when everything came down. But the people acting like they were mad were just looking for a reason to take them down a peg. I refuse to acknowledge or pretend as though these people were really this upset about that.
And I think time is vindicating your position and my position ultimately, which is that it's okay to root for Tiger Woods.
But
it's okay.
But to be fair, no one ever stopped. When did they stop? Every time that we've had a whiff of Tiger getting back to the top, I don't recall there ever being a point where people were like, I just don't want to see him win. Now, they went overboard when guys like Phil Mickelson did win and when Rory McIlroy had his little run. But whenever Tiger's been close, we've all come right back.
By the way, because you brought this up, what was the funniest part of the humiliation of Tiger to you? Because I have mine. I'm curious, before I tell you what mine is, what yours is.
That one woman who worked as the waitress at Perkins said that the only thing that Tiger Woods ever bought her was a sandwich from Subway, which raised the question for me, did Tiger Woods himself go into this Subway, look onto his phone, make sure he got the order right before going to pick her up and then giving her some Subway?
And it raises a question for me about whether Tiger sprung for the footlong.
Can't be sure.
I guess he can.
He's probably like, you know, she's not a very big woman. She doesn't, I didn't want to offend you by acting like you'd eat a whole footlong sandwich.
Even though it is a $5 footlong promotion right now.
That is correct. Nah, was that yours?
No, that's definitely my top three. But my number one is still, and I forget the provenance of this harrowing detail, but it was the thing about how Tiger allegedly would sext about a dream he had where the woman he was fascinated by was like in a threesome with Derek Jeter and David Boreanaz.
I didn't know this.
Oh yeah. From Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Derek Jeter. And this lady was an object of Tiger's fascination. I hope I got that right. We'll fact check that because I'm pretty sure that that's too good to not make up.
Yeah,
I don't
think you could have come up with it. I just haven't heard it and thereby want to make sure that I am not responsible for any of the consequences that happen to come.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But it was like I had more fun watching that golf tournament than I've had watching a football game in years.
Agreed.
I really don't feel like I'm exaggerating in this. I also marvel at golf television production. Like, it's pretty amazing when you think about it, because as much as I understand the idea is boring to watch people play golf, it's boring to watch a person play golf. They're keeping the action in your face at all times. Like, they're going from shot to shot. There's never a time that's down where there's not something for you to watch.
It's a carousel of constant entertainment. And maybe one part of the carousel is Tiger Woods, and he is 50 million times more interesting than everyone else. But you get back to Tiger pretty quick.
Yeah.
That was the thing. Like, oh, wow, I didn't – this is way more friendly to the younger generation than I recall.
Yeah, I still want Tiger, though, since he didn't win this PGA. I need him to win the Masters. Basically, I need him to win a major with Jim Nance is there. Because let us not forget, it wasn't that long ago that Jim Nance snitched on Tiger. After like a moment where it all flipped, he hit that shot that hit the flagpole, that hit the flagstick, and then went all the way back in the water, and then came, I believe, after that was the drop. Mm. And then Jim Nance snitched on him because people who watch golf snitch.
There is that.
I want Jim Nance to be there when it happens. I want him to be there. I want him to be at Augusta as they've done everything in their power to change the course to make it such that he couldn't win or that he yes. wouldn't win. They level. Jack Nicklaus won the Masters 6 times. They ain't never changed the course to make it so that everybody else had a chance.
Jim Nance, though, has to understand in his heart of hearts as well that when Tiger is good, the business of Jim Nance is
good
in parallel?
Nah, because the business of Jim Nance is just the business of Jim Nance. Like, the thing I think that people lose sight of about golf is, yeah, like, they would like the high ratings because they can sell a higher ad rate, they can make more money, whatever it is. But they're not particularly interested, at least not in application, of actually growing this game. What about the history of golf in this country indicates that they want more people to do it? You know, like, there's not that. There are great ways to expand the reach of your game. They don't seem to really do that.
You mean a sport premised on the concept of a country club isn't exactly throwing its doors wide open?
Yeah, like, that's not really the way that they're out here playing this right now. So Tiger puts golf on the radar of people like me who otherwise would not pay attention. I contend that the golf world doesn't care if I pay attention or not. Like, that's a set of people and a level of bread. They're not caring about the rest of us. They just out here, we got it, cool, we straight. That's them. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about this national anthem madness in the NFL in a second. But first, know a lot of you guys wear your suits off the rack. And I don't blame you for getting an off-the-rack suit. But a made-to-measure suit is so much better than what you're doing. And Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements. The fit and comfort are unparalleled. And look, people love the wide selection, all the things they offer for you when putting your suit together. There's high-quality fabrics, all the colors that you can choose from, and you can make it your own. You can personalize it. Get the lapel that you want, the lining, the pockets, the button, even get your own monogram written on the stuff. Now, let me tell you the way this goes. What you do is you go in to visit a stylist at a showroom. You can have them take your measurements for you personally, and you can do this at your home yourself if you want to do it that way. After you do that, go to Indochino.com. You pick your fabric, you do design customizations, and then you send in your measurements with your choices. You relax, your suit gets done, professionally tailored, mailed to you in a couple of weeks. And my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com. Using the promo code BOMANI at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Shipping doesn't cost a thing. It's Indochino.com. Promo code BOMANI for any premium suit for $359 and free shipping. An incredible deal for a made-to-measure suit. Also, been a long season without football. But FanDuel has spent that offseason getting in the best shape of their lives. What they mean by this is FanDuel's ready for more. It's more ways to play, more ways to challenge your friends, and importantly, more ways to win. If you're not a daily fantasy expert, FanDuel is clearly the best place to play. They have all kinds of contests just for casual fans. Importantly, particularly, Beat the Score contests are great because they pay out everyone who hits a certain score. All you have to do is finish in the money to split an equal share of the cash. And FanDuel also has new options for playing daily fantasy with your friends because the only thing better than winning cash is winning your friends' cash. Best of all, FanDuel is doing their part to make the preseason bearable with preseason fantasy contests running up to week one of the NFL season. Right now, you can get a $20 bonus when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/Bomani. Age and state restrictions apply. All right, so preseason's here. Did you see this thing? Apparently, Kenny Stills of the Miami Dolphins continued to kneel during the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't the Dolphins the one they had their paperwork snitched out about all the things they might do to you?
That's right.
If you kneel during the national anthem.
Right.
And Stephen Ross is not here for the kneeling during the national anthem.
But maybe he is on the back end because he realized that, this is a terrible look.
Well, yeah, I don't know. But the thing about Ross is concluded that this is strategically ineffective. And I think that's a fair point to make. That's
it, is. It is.
But anyway, Kenny still kneeling, still getting down. Marshawn Lynch sitting on the bench, minding his own business. Now, here's why I bring this up. In Miami, the Broward County Police Union is doing what police unions do. They want people to boycott the Dolphins. But Pablo, you notice Marshawn Lynch just sits on the bench and don't nobody say a word.
Now, is that Marshawn or is that just a brilliant hack?
that
people really just are slow to catching on because they're following the president's lead or whatever angry websites lead. Which one is it?
So let's think about the way that this stuff is covered, right? Because what this has done for a lot of people in media is everybody's on anthem watch, right? Like you go into the game and now everybody's sitting there counting to see if 53 people are standing there, if they can find somebody else. But in the end, this isn't really a story, right? Like that's not really why anybody got into the business of this. Now, what I think is interesting about Marshawn Lynch is you cannot make an argument that what he's doing is a protest. At least not if you're making the argument that the national anthem is a politically neutral act, right? Because if it's a politically neutral act, then to not acknowledge it is also neutral. Now, if you want to say to somebody doing something during that anthem to bring attention in some way is a protest that is done during the national anthem, then that makes sense. And have you noticed the guys that are sitting over there minding their own business? Michael Bennett is another example of that. Now, Michael Bennett's got his name tied up in a bunch of other stuff, but nobody really trips about the anthem stuff.
Not in this context. And you raise a really good point because what if all that is required is, in fact, silence? Like, what if you're just plausibly tired?
Yeah.
Because the Kaepernick thing originally, we wanted him to explain, and one of the things he did do over time is explain in great detail. But what if he never did?
Yeah.
I'm recovering from a long week of practice.
Yeah.
You know, like,
the irony of it is, Kaepernick was over there sitting, and that was taken by a lot of people as being some level of disrespect. So the solution to that was then to kneel during the national anthem, as the act of kneeling is considered to be an act of respect, and it was intended to show deference to veterans, right? And we had this whole other question about whether or not, like, the flag is now property of the veterans, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that was intended to show respect and deference to veterans.
You would have thought
but it did become its own form of protest that was not about deference, but it was a matter of trying to find a way to do this without making people too mad. And so the kneeling became whatever, and then the people who do the kneeling are the ones that people are mad at. But if you just go sit over there about a cooler, you can probably get away with this. Marcus Peters, they came to ask him last year about it. He's like, nah, I ain't talking about it. And no one, and with all the things that go on around Marcus Peters, people do not associate this with him, right? And that's what I think is most interesting. This isn't about what you actually do during the national anthem. It is about whether you are making the point that, you know, we might be treating these black people not so well. That's where the line is being drawn.
I listened to Kenny Stills stand in the locker room and take questions, and he was excellent, like truly impressive and someone who, if you take him seriously and, you know, as a human being, you got to think to yourself, wow, that guy's doing a great job in terms of explaining what actually he is trying to say. But before watching that, I would have also told you that, yeah, I'm also tired of all of this. I'm ready for a new thing. I am ready for some new version of a protest, some movement forward, whatever it is, whether it's the Randy Moss approach of wearing a tie, whether it's, I forget which, Doug Baldwin wore a shirt, I believe, mm-hmm. talking about 60% of population in prison is people of color, all that stuff. But then you listen to Kenny Stills and you're like, yeah, good point.
Well,
good point, Kenny Stills.
But you know what, though? And I think this gets lost when they're trying to figure out what would it make for people to stop doing this. Maybe if some people actually listened. But as long as people make the argument that they don't know why they're doing it, then people are going to keep trying to make the point, because what you're saying is, I just don't understand. They're not going to stop until they feel like you do.
That is the concession that I think someone who wants to move the protests forward is making. They are admitting that they're probably not going to get any more people to listen doing this. And that is true. It is an exit ramp because of the loaded nature of the anthem and, as you put it, the ownership of that space and that song vis-a-vis, as people have pointed out, paid Department of Defense contracts. But it's also true that if you guys listened, this would go a lot different.
Right. I wouldn't have to keep trying to tell you this if you would just listen to what it is that I am talking about. But, of course, we wouldn't have to talk about any of this stuff if the league just hadn't messed this up so bad, like your man Jerry over there keeping his hat on, not taking it off. Which, the more I think about it, man, that's not like an old man that was just being vain. That he didn't have his hair right.
The best defense I can imagine.
Right, but it's the worst defense possible, because you are saying how you feel about your hair is more important than the national anthem being played. These cats are saying our human dignity is more important than the anthem being played, and people are saying, no, put your toe on the line. Jerry's out here talking about, nah, I ain't got my comb. Oh, word?
I allegedly didn't have my
coat. So, by transitive properties, Jerry Jones is saying how his hair looks is more important than their dignity.
By the way, because he no-commented and he said no, no, no when asked to offer his thoughts on this, like, you are presented with two scenarios. On the one hand, Jerry was deliberately disrespecting the U.S. flag code. Or on the other, he actually honestly was oblivious that this mattered. And if it's the second thing, that's arguably more infuriating than the first.
Yeah, but
because
he knows.
Well, I hope so, because otherwise, what the hell are we doing here?
But I also think, I feel like he knows these rules aren't his. Now, this is part of it to me with Jerry, because I don't think Jerry's approaching this strictly as a matter of principle, right? I don't have any direct evidence of this, but never forget, the Cowboys kneeled before the national anthem. I forget who it was that came up with that level of compromise, right? But the Cowboys kneeled before the national anthem. They were playing a game in Arizona on Monday night. Jerry went out there with the squad,
yep,
kneeled with
linked
them,
arms.
Linked arms, and they got booed. That was the read for him, like, oh, no, 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 this is a bad play. He also happens to be an old white man from Arkansas, so sometimes some of that might slip out. But I think more than anything, this is not good for me.
And he has a history of, quite frankly, not caring about what the Central League office has to say.
That is correct.
To Jerry Jones. So whether it's saber-rattling or whether it's actually showing respect for those who carry sabers on behalf of America, either way, it's Jerry being, what are you going to do? What are you going to do to me?
Yeah, but see, I think he's made a mistake with this, though. The Cowboys are the most important thing in the NFL, right? Like, just for people to understand this, if you wonder why every show you watch is going to have something on about the Dallas Cowboys, nothing moves the needle in the NFL like the Cowboys. You can't lose. If there's a halfway decent Cowboys topic, you put it as high up in your show as you possibly can. If you do our job, you need to know what's going on with the Cowboys, because people care about the Cowboys more than anything else. We are not talking at all about Dallas Cowboys football. One thing Jerry is always worried about is the eyeballs being on his football team. This is one of the rare times where the eyeballs being on him, rather than put more eyeballs on the football team, takes them away from the team.
Mm. And it's also a business where not only will we talk about Cowboys topics, we'll probably talk about Cowboys topics with the Cowboys,
yes,
with former Cowboys. And you're right. If we're not talking about the team, but we're talking about the alleged reputation as America's team in the context of this fraught topic, that doesn't seem that great for business, no.
No, no. But here we are. They said they'd cut anybody who did it. A lot of them contracts go guaranteed after week one. I can't wait to see if somebody gonna test Stephen Jones on that one. Like, imagine if that happened, right? Like, they get past it. Past week one, DeMarcus Lawrence, for example, hit that knee.
I mean, is the new market inefficiency then to scoop up players with conscience off the waiver wire? Is that how that works?
Here's the question I would ask if that were to happen. Do you think a team would be more excited about signing a kneeler or someone who has been accused of a violent crime against a woman?
We know the answer to that question.
But here's the thing, though. It's not like the line was, like, for Greg Hardy, for example. Mm-hmm. The line to sign him wasn't very long. Like, we can't pretend the whole league was like, yeah, we'll go ahead and do this. But that line still was longer than the line to sign Colin Kaepernick or Eric Reid,
well,
who, by the way, still doesn't have a job.
That was crazy to me. And again, because I am numb to this in the way that I'm sure so many people out there are, when I read that Eric Reid didn't have a job, it reminded me that Eric Reid doesn't have a job?
Doesn't have a job. And nobody's got it. there were a lot of stories that people told about Kaepernick and why it was that Kaepernick shouldn't have had a job. Now, the logic behind those has all fallen apart, right? Like, you can't make the he wasn't good enough to play in the NFL argument. That whole thing fell apart. Nobody made that argument about Eric Reed. Nobody looked at Eric Reed with the 49ers as a guy that was on the verge of playing his way out. Not a single person did. He's still not there. And the people who cover this business, Kaepernick was such a lightning rod because he was the face of everything that happened. Reed was just a dude that was riding shotgun with him. But the question is there, and it's absolutely fair to be asked, what are we going to do about this now? Right? Like, those of us who watch this and observe this for a living, what are we going to do or what are we going to say about this now? Because this dude is out here stuck like Chuck.
And if Kenny Stills is not out there in that locker room talking about how Eric Reed deserves a job and Colin Kaepernick deserves a job, but they do not have them, who else is supposed to say that? Right.
Right.
Like, that's... Kenny Stills is doing his duty as a person with a brain who is also friends with these guys, but this is the truth.
One thing I also think that is interesting in this is they could have let Eric Reed go right away if they wanted to. They let the contract run out.
Yeah.
Somebody could let Kenny Stills go. Again, I think Ross has a different view than a lot of these owners, but somebody could let Kenny Stills go. It's about what happens after the fact, but these teams are still keeping you if they feel like you are useful in one way or another. They'll keep you around for just a little while to get whatever they need from you, right? But when it's time for somebody else to go get you, you don't know about that, dog.
And so we are in a world where the NFL is, in fact, treating thought as a crime. The inconvenient thoughts of these people, premised upon their human dignity by and large. The same way you might weigh a domestic violence charge.
Yeah.
Think about that. Think about the fact that you are straight up policing thought that, by the way, is 100% correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
They deserve jobs. Like, and it's boring to hear it over and over again, but you kind of got to keep saying it so long as they don't have the jobs.
Right. And, I mean, it's a frightening thought as to what they're saying about this. Like, slowly but surely, they're just trying to make sure you know this could be the end of your career. If this goes this way, that's what they're letting you know. But in spite of that, man, Cat's still doing it. Like, that's the thing. I wonder how far that would have to go, though, with guys not being signed before it reached a critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who's somebody they just couldn't get away with doing that with? Because I also make the argument, how many really, really, really big stars have done this up until, you know, have really gotten on this up to this point?
Well, this is why it's interesting to hear from Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Right? At a not coincidental time. Yeah, he doesn't want to get into the mud with all of this stuff because it is so Trump-centric and it is messy and distracting and all those things, but he does also agree with the underlying thoughts being expressed. Of course, the next question is, well, if Aaron Rodgers isn't going to do it, then who is going to actually be out on the limb with these guys that'll actually make a difference?
Yeah, but see, what would happen if Aaron Rodgers would hit a knee? Like, I was thinking about this with Dak Prescott, and Dak Prescott's not that dude, right? Say what you want to, you know.
Apparently
right,
not.
Right, good or bad, no matter how you feel about him, he's not that dude. But what if Dak Prescott were a guy to kneel during the national anthem? Because he's a quarterback, right? This is outside of quarterback world. No quarterback other than Aaron Rodgers, really, and Kaepernick, obviously, has said anything, like, actually interesting about this. We got a lot of black quarterbacks in the league right now, but something worth considering about this is that this is the first era where you've had great social upheaval and all of those things in the background with the existence of the NFL black quarterback. Like, yeah, there's one or two back in the day, but it wasn't as many as you got right now. And these dudes, ain't nobody really looking at them like, so, you gonna take a knee, Tyrod Taylor's like, bro, do you know what they're gonna do to me if I do that? Mm-mm. So the quarterbacks are in front. The quarterback is the leader. The quarterback can change things, but the quarterback is a apolitical position.
It does have more to do, the quarterback does, with respectability. It does feel like they are still the black quarterback generation that you're referring to. They are still sort of proving
right
that they belong, and that is a lot to ask.
But it's also all quarterbacks. Quarterbacks are management, right? They are a wing of management. No quarterback is getting out here saying anything worth hearing. None, right? But then it becomes interesting. The black quarterback is such a provocative notion. And in this setting, the idea of a black quarterback and the actual black quarterbacks that we have, except for the one who can't get a job, means nothing. All right, we'll be back and talk about Jalen Ramsey in just a second, but check this out. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. I'm one of those 66%. He knows your hair loss is too late. Your move is to keep the hair you have. That's easier than replacing the hair that you lost. So if your hairline is slowly starting to move back and you see those bald spots, think about how you'll feel a year from now if it's business as usual up there. So let me ask you, you want a bald spot to pop up or you want to do something about it first? Why turn to guys with weird solutions that don't do anything when you can turn to medicine and science? For Hims.com, it's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims will connect you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat your hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions, they'll help you keep your hair. None of that crazy stuff you get from the gas station. These are prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting room, no awkward visit to the doctor. Save hours going to ForHims.com. It's that easy. You'll answer a few quick questions, the doctor will review and can prescribe you. Products are shipped directly to your door. Order now. My listeners get a trial of Hims for just $5 today, right now while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/Bomani. That's forhims.com/Bomani. forhims.com/Bomani. All right, Jalen Ramsey got suspended by the Jacksonville Jaguars for a week of preseason. I don't even know, like, does that even count as a suspension?
Apparently, people in the NFL are openly acknowledging, starting with Hugh Jackson in Cleveland and Antonio Callaway, who he punished by making play a preseason game. Everyone's sort of establishing that, yeah, no one actually wants to do this.
No, like, I thought about the idea of Jalen Ramsey being suspended for a preseason game. Like, that's like being suspended from school for a week during senior year and you already got your credits. Like, fine, I'll take a week off. Whatever.
I was gonna probably be taking a de facto week off anyway.
Yeah, like, that was the plan. Okay, you got it. But what happened was Dante Fowler got into a scrap with a dude whose name I don't remember no more, but they got into a scrap. Jalen Ramsey screamed to a reporter not to record it. By the way, at the point at which he screamed, don't record that, the phone did stop.
The video does end.
The recording did end at that point. Ramsey went on Twitter and said that he was going to be like war on the media or something like that. You know, y'all want a war, we'll give you a war. I don't know what exactly is going on. The Jaguars then suspend him for a week for
conduct unbecoming of a Jaguar. Or conduct detrimental.
No, unbecoming. It was unbecoming of a Jaguar. You nailed it. And we're like, what? What are you talking about? And then someone reminded us Tom Coughlin's in charge there.
Yeah, so, which explains a lot of it.
Yeah, so then Tom Coughlin did that. That was the Tom Coughlin play. What? Like, adversarial relationship with the media has kind of been commonplace in this game. That's just what it is. I was shocked to see that that would be something that merited a suspension.
But it does remind me of what the refs are doing in the preseason, which is throwing flags at a lot of stuff that they just won't punish in the regular season. Like, maybe this is just one of those big demonstrations you make to try and solidify media relations because the cost, which is the preseason, is just so actually minimal.
Yeah, but I still think it would have blown over so quick that it wouldn't have been a thing, right? Now, here's another theory for you. You tell me what you think about this one. The quarterback is by and large in charge of a team. Like, a team is going to have leadership figures, right? And the quarterback is normally at the top of the food chain. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that that's not really an option in Jacksonville when your quarterback is Blake Bortles.
No. And it does.
You
know?
Right? Yeah, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
This is a team. Who's in charge of this team? The best player on the team, without question, is Jalen Ramsey. And Jalen Ramsey talks a lot. And I get the feeling that the way that Jalen Ramsey gets down is not in line with the way that Tom Coughlin gets down, trying to tell Jalen Ramsey that he is not in charge here, even though in practice, he's probably who's in charge here.
That's like the best theory we got. But I will also point out that if any part of this in Tom Coughlin's head is about serving and servicing the media, the media would be wise to realize that any day that Jalen Ramsey is yelling at one of your colleagues, turn that bleeping video off, is a great day professionally for one of those colleagues. Like, that's why I love Jalen Ramsey and why even if he is vaguely threatening journalists, I continue to love him. He is making everyone's job that much easier all the time because he does not care.
He's a content machine.
He is a machine, and he is serving us way more through his alleged misbehavior than anyone who was actually truly polite is in fact doing for us.
I would love to hear what he actually thinks of Tom Coughlin and what Tom Coughlin actually thinks of him. I would love it just to know those things.
And I feel like you can get that with like a follow-up question that's just sort of your eyebrows going up. He wants to tell us. But that's the thing about him and Blake Bortles, right? Like, I think that Blake Bortles is a bad quarterback. But I also will admit that I think Blake Bortles is a bad quarterback because it seems like Jalen Ramsey thinks Blake Bortles is a bad quarterback.
One thing that is very interesting is the way DBs feel about the quarterback on their own team. Now that Kirk Cousins is gone and the things that Josh Norman seems to have to say about him now that he's not actually on the team. Like when the quarterback is there, everybody's always behind him because that's what you got to do. But the DBs, I imagine, are the ones who know, especially if it's some dude they played against before. They're like, man, he's sorry. Jalen Ramsey might have played against Blake Bortles. No, no, Jalen's not actually from Florida. But I was going to say, he might have played against him in high school. But like, man, he's been sorry since the 10th grade. Even right there, Jalen Ramsey looking at that film with Blake Bortles being like, I would eat you alive.
And my only worry with Jalen Ramsey is that the cycle of cornerbacks does enter these guys into our lives and then it exits them just as quick. Like, is Josh where is Josh Norman right now? Do we still care about him as a player?
Well, I mean, if he could get into another fight with Odell, I think the most disappointing thing if we haven't had, like, the Odell fireworks.
Agreed.
Well, the thing is, cornerback and running back are the two positions left in the league where basically you got to get it done by the time you turn 30. Like, there are some guys who manage to get it done on the back end, but by and large, like, look at what happened with Revis.
Yep.
30 came around, and that was pretty much a wrap on it for him. So the fact that Ramsey is so good so young, like, he can put this up early and then be like, okay, Pantheon-level corner. But you're right, Richard Sherman. We don't know if Richard Sherman is going to be anything this year coming off the Achilles tear, for example.
No, but on the sheer force of their personalities, I think there is an argument that outside of and wide receivers will also always be at the top of this conversation, but cornerbacks are right there. We talked about the quarterback as a de facto coach, a de facto management. Cornerbacks are kind of like the union organizers.
Except they're not so concerned with the union necessarily.
Yes, right? yes.
Like the spirit of a union organizer, a union of one.
Yes, not solidarity in the way that you think it is.
Right, maybe the DB room. But the thing, you know, the thing that corners and wide receivers tend to have in common, ran track.
Oh, yeah, they're fast. These dudes,
no, they ran track. Yeah, they're fast, but they have the personalities of people who ran track.
You go look at
sprinter personalities and how they get down and then go back and look at wide receivers. They're the same kind of different.
They have the personalities of people that are used to cameras being on them at the moments of great glory.
Yes, and it is singular glory in large part. Because like, you could talk a lot about how it takes 11 people to make a play or whatever and da-da-da. But in the end, yeah, you need a good pass from your quarterback. But if you're wide receiver, it is a very individual thing. You're not waiting on somebody to open up a hole for you. Like, yeah, somebody might go deep and then clear out the underneath for you, but that's not how the wide receiver looks at the world.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't it. They right. different in that regard.
And at the center, of course, of that Venn diagram is Deion Sanders.
That's a good place to wrap. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We're getting this thing done once a week here through the summer. September, we go back to doing it twice a week. That's my man Pablo Torre. Greatly appreciate him joining us. Remember, High Noon's moving to the 4 o'clock Eastern on September 11th. The name is going to stay the same, but trust me, I got a way to make that whole thing work. That's going to be it. Thanks to my man Gabe Bassane for handling everything behind the scenes. Thanks to Indochino, and also thanks to FanDuel and Hims, our sponsors, and we will talk to you guys next week. Remember, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. Only 4 stars, you are probably being a hater. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.